You're listening to the In the Money Players Podcast. Hello and welcome to the In the Money, yes, the In the Money Players Podcast. This is show number 6. It is Friday, January 11th, 2019. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, we have a great show lined up for you today. But before I introduce the guests and get to that, I just have to say, a lot of you out there probably realize that I did say the wrong name of the show last time. I was kind of surprised that only about half a dozen people pointed that out to me. I thought you guys liked me more than that, and more people would have said, hey, Pete, you may want to remember that you're not affiliated with those old letters anymore. You're the In the Money Players Podcast. Eric Bylick, the first one to point it out. A few other messages came in. I will surely make that mistake again. Now, granted, I had a lot better excuse making that mistake when we were doing a live show. So with the editing, it's really like double my bad, but hey, these things happen. I'm now going to bring in the regular co-host of this program. He is on the planet Texas, but I don't believe he's in any of his usual locations. I think he's pulled over on the side of a highway somewhere, if I understood that correctly. I'm talking about the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. JK, what's up?
What's going on, PTF? No, I'm at home. I'm heading over to Houston. The Prince of Keeneland's having like a shower of some sort, some couple shower. I'm going by myself, but I'm going to be his date, even though he's the one who's. We'll figure it out. So I'm heading over to Houston today.
How about this? Isn't it kind of a little bit your bad too? I mean, I'm here, I'm recording, I'm trying to put the run of the show together, I'm doing all this stuff. When I say the wrong name of the show at the beginning, can't you help a brother out?
Pete, I got bad news for you. I guess it's a good time to tell you. I don't normally listen to you unless I have to.
I think that's true. You did. There was also an occasion on the show last time I almost made fun of you where you repeated verbatim like a little point I had just made. I think it was about your friend Trophy Chaser's Timeform US figure and using almost the same words. And it is sometimes almost like you don't listen, but that's okay. You listen when it counts.
I do my best.
And we're going to bring in, returning to the show, one of our most popular guests that we've ever had on the old show. And hopefully we're going to have just as much success on the new show, giving out winners, talking about the interesting place that is the intersection of the breeding business and the betting business, from WinStar, Sean Tugel. Sean, how are you today?
Doing quite well, Pete, and thank you for having me back on, regardless of the letters that you use. So appreciate it, and as always, it's always quite enjoyable to have a good conversation with you and talk to you, and obviously don't worry about giving Kitchen a little bit of ribbing. He deserves it every once in a while, and I hope he does enjoy his couple's shower that he's going to. It sounds like a very good time.
It does sound like I could see. Is there going to be tea and cucumber sandwiches, JK?
You clearly don't know the Prince of Keeneland very well. There's going to be wings, and the football game's going to be on.
It does sound like my character.
JK, though, I think what you need to do, though, if you come in, you need to are you involved in any of the planning for it? Because you could come in with one of those good games, kind of like what smelling what kind of chocolate candy bar it is in the diaper or something. You could bring something to the table there for them.
I should do something. I will do that. I have a 3-hour drive over to Houston. I'll be sure to come up with some kind of fun shower game.
Oh my goodness. JK, you mentioned that the games are going to be on. We're going to do a very quick diversion into the NFL just because it seemed to me, and I know Sean as somebody who took us as a guest to the WinStar Suite up in Cincinnati to watch a Bengals game, that you're NFL simpatico too. Is it just me, or does the NFC chalk parlay seem like an interesting wager this weekend? I think if you take both of these home favorites, you can get something on the order of about 3 to 5 on two teams that I just don't really see losing in the Rams and the Saints. JK, what do you love the chalk like no one else. What do you think?
No, I completely agree. I think the Rams and the Saints both coming in off of buys. I think those buys are a huge advantage when you're in the playoffs or coming in off of a bye. They'll be rested and prepared. I think both of them will win. And I actually think the favorites on the other side will probably win too. I'm not a big Colts fan. And I've obviously had a big thing against the Chargers all year. Jake's a little upset about that. The Prince of Keeneland, he's a big Chargers guy. But I think all the favorites are going to win, especially the NFC.
Sean, I've never talked to you. If you ever, when you're out in Vegas, if you wager on the NFL at all, do you look at it just as a fan, or does betting occasionally happen?
Mainly as a fan. I'm a very, as far as sports go, a very periphery fan. So kind of know what's going on. Couldn't tell you everybody who's on every team, but periphery kind of. You know, you catch the occasional game. Don't bet on it too often. Maybe something during the Super Bowl. But I do have to say, from the football I have seen, New Orleans does look like the team I would think has the best chance of running the table, especially if they get to play in the Superdome. Do they get the home field advantage throughout? I wasn't quite sure about that.
Throughout, they get it throughout, yeah.
So I think it will go through New Orleans. Philadelphia, I mean, they got a quarterback, you know. When they win, you know. I mean, hell, you get some of those salty geldings that show up year in, year out, and they win when it matters. So, you know, they got Nick Foles. So,
we won't have a better moment on the show all year than Sean Tugel comparing Nick Foles to a salty gelding.
Skip over to AFC, which I know a little bit better because I am a painful Bills fan.
Oof.
And, New England has been quite dominant, and I just think you're always going to have to dethrone New England no matter what, but you're good.
Let's talk horse racing, gentlemen, in earnest. I have a list of many, many questions for you, Sean, but I know there's one question about just about his favorite horse in training that JK is going to ask. We'll let him start with that.
Where is the big horse, Yoshida? When will we see him next?
Yoshida, he is at Payson Park, and he is on target for the Pegasus Turf, which we think will be right up his alley. His first race back last year of 2018 was a Grade 1 win, and so we'll bring him back here in 2019. He's a horse that's going to have a lot of options throughout the year. He is a now 5-year-old. He's a Grade 1 winner on both surfaces, so. Gives us a lot of options. A horse we're really excited about. Fantastic pedigree. He's going to be a great stallion prospect when he comes home to us. So, but he's going to get 2019 kickstarted. Everything goes as planned on the Pegasus Turf.
While we're talking Pegasus, you guys have some other runners in there as well. You mind giving us a little rundown, Sean, of who's going to run where and what you think their prospects are at this time?
Pegasus Day actually has possibility of being extremely busy, which is good. It's always fun having runners on those big days. And, you know, Pegasus Day is year three. And I think it's fantastic that, you know, you have multiple large races. Cause I think that's what the big days are all about is being able to showcase horses in each division and having a turf race, you know, in America where turf racing is becoming a much more accepted division and a very exciting division. Having a race that is almost equal, you know, I think the horses that will show up in the Pegasus Turf race, you would say, are as exciting as the horses that are showing up in the dirt race as a whole. So that those days are quite crucial for breeding, for racing, for everything. So to be involved in those days is quite exciting. But Audible has come out of his race well. He's working steadily. The target for him would be the dirt race where he had an undefeated record there until he got beat in Austral in the last race. And I don't like making excuses for horses, and it's not my job to do that anyway. So, but you know, the track was soupy and he had to go wide, and there was, you know, I think, you know, third off the layoff, nice progression. And so he has every right to run back to form. And then a horse that we've always been extremely high on, who is lightly raced, who's by one of our premier stallions, Coppertown.
Sure.
By Spicetown. He is going to run in the undercard on, hopefully, in the Fred, I believe it's the Fred Hoover, it's the mile race. So he's a horse that we have, he ran last time out in Scar Mile. So I think that was his fourth, fifth lifetime start and, you know, had been off a long layoff and just about ran a track record at Keeneland on first off the layoff and kind of missed the break a little bit and maybe bounce a little bit out of that first run. But he's going to come back. He's been breezing extremely well from what I can see down at Palm Beach Downs. So those three are very exciting horses that we get to have on Pegasus Day.
You mentioned that field for the Pegasus turf. To be perfectly honest, with all the craziness going on in life, I haven't been following probably as closely as I should. Who else is expected to show up there to oppose the great Yoshida?
Have you heard much, Jonathan?
No, I actually haven't heard a lot. I'd imagine there's going to be something from overseas, but I actually haven't heard very many at all. But you know what? That's kind of what's happened with the Pegasus for whatever reason. I guess maybe just because it's new in its conception. It's like it feels like you never really know who's running in it until like the week or two before.
I was caught out a little bit on UK TV last night when I was being asked by Daryl Williams on Sky Racing, the new channel, to preview the Pegasus. And I know who the top two are in the market in that big race. And I kind of flubbed it from there and punted the question, which I always feel bad about doing. I do love the concept of the Pegasus turf, but I hope they give that race time to grow. It's such a tough time for the English and Irish trained horses. They're just not at a place in their cycle where I would imagine there's going to be all that much awareness to be shipping over for the first year. But I feel like if they promote this event in the UK and in Ireland, there's a chance that by year three, they're coming up with some sort of special program to send over a couple of horses. It's a lot of money, and I do think you could get that kind of participation. I'm just not sure if you're going to get it right off the bat, but we'll see what happens with that. I will be over in the UK on TV doing those races on the new channel. I'm really excited about that. Should be a very fun opportunity. Where should we go next, Sean? I want to ask you about...
But just one quick thing on that Pegasus turf, though, and just sitting here thinking is, I know we focus so much on the Ireland and England turf horses, but I believe that, you know, if you could think, you know, a lot of those, some of those horses will go over there to Hong Kong, and Hong Kong, you know, for a $7 million race back to Gulfstream, and then you got another good get. You got a nice gap there that you can train up to the Dubai race. I mean, there should be a nice little circuit where you think some of those top class turf horses could start making that kind of a little winter program.
Sean, I was thinking about a horse earlier, and I hadn't seen him on the work tab. But what about Bulletin? Is he going to be back for his 3-year-old year, or did he have a little setback?
No, he it's a program that we implement quite a bit here. Is we like to focus on the spring and summer with the 3-year-olds, especially with the dirt horses. And you know, Bulletin is a horse that we implemented as well as a horse called Preamble. He's they're both on the same program. They both had really good 2-year-old form. They both ran twice. They're both undefeated. But they're both probably not 2-turn horses. Bulletin right now has been a turf horse. And, you know, as far as spots there on the wintertime, there's few that kind of really, that are something that you have to have in a stallion's resume or that have to be run in that by running there, you might compromise, you know, down the road, like the Woody Stevens horses that, which is now grade one, you know, the Alan Jerkins, the 7-furlong race for 3-year-olds. And then turf racing, I mean, now with the way Ascot Falls and really the emphasis on having runners there as well, that would be the primary target with Bulletin. So he's getting ready to ship back, I think, within the next 2 weeks. I saw him train here yesterday. He looks fantastic. He's growing. He's put weight and muscle on. Couldn't be doing any better. You know, we kicked him out. He got 30 days in the paddock. He got to recharge the batteries a little bit, and hopefully we can have a lot of fun with him coming up. So very excited about that horse.
Very cool. Interesting the way that Ascot is now on the lips and the minds of so many in the USA breeding industry. Cool to know.
When you think about it, I mean, they've got national live coverage on, you know, NBC Sports 5 days, 6 days. We don't have a horse meet in the U.S. that gets 5 days of national coverage in a row. So, you know, that's a pretty big deal. So especially I think when with the advance of turf race in America, you know, having that mark, you know, Yoshida only got beat a length and a half over there last year against the, you know, some of the best milers on turf over there. So when you can put one in the Stallion Barn, that one over there, marquee race that everybody in the world's paying attention to, that's a pretty big deal too.
Absolutely. Have to talk about the Triple Crown prospects this year. Not necessarily to win the entire Triple Crown, but horses on the Triple Crown trail. What kind of an update can you give us about these new three-year-olds?
Well, we have one improbable who won the grade one last time out. He just had his first work back after winning the race at Los Alamitos. He's 3 for 3. He's already broken the 90 buyer speed figure as a 2-year-old. So he's out of an APN demerit, so he should absolutely relish the added distance. He's doing well. I haven't heard what race they're discussing, but, you know, Santa Anita, Oaklawn, something along those lines would probably be earmarked. And I believe they would plan on probably running twice leading up to the Derby. And the other horse that we have high hopes for that doesn't have quite the resume was a horse called Global Campaign that Stanley Huff has. We own a partnership with Sagamore Racing. He won, it was last weekend. He's a horse that we bred. Unfortunately, we lost the mare, but she's also out of an APND herself, and it was a Claiborne bred mare. But she's so far, this is her third horse to race. The other two were Sonic Mule, who's a stakes winner, and Bolt the Oro, who's a multiple grade one winner.
Sure.
So this is her third full, and not, unfortunately her last, but he's by Curlin. And he's a horse that, you know, was immature at the sale. And so we stayed in with Sagamore, and they're great partners. And Stanley Huff's a fantastic trainer. And he won last week. Like, it was pretty impressive. He got an 86 buyer there. And I just thought if you watch his replay and you watch him going around the turn, his ears were pricked to the sky going around there, and he was just having fun. So very excited. You know, that horse has just pure raw talent. He's a very exciting horse. You know, he got started a little late, but don't want to compare him to everybody, but I guess the Apollo curse is over as well, so maybe he's a horse that we can have some fun with here coming up.
So I know the Keeneland sale is just wrapping up. What's some of the fun stuff that happened for Windstar during the sale, or what, you know, when the sales kind of starting to pick up this year, what are some of the, you know, the younger sires you guys are excited about that are starting to be well received?
Yeah, well, we bought, we jumped in and bought two very nice mares at the sale. I bought a Quality Road filly that was great to be placed. Very excited about her. And then bought a Stuart Humor filly who was in full to Quality Road out of the Blackwood consignment, and they had quite the selection. Mr. Shields unfortunately passed away, and they had the first part of his dispersal, and he had some very, very good breeding stock. And we bought the young Distorted Humor mare, and Distorted Humor himself is just, he's a breed-shaping broodmare sire. So you can't have enough young Distorted Humor mares, especially ones that were great stakes winners in Caron. So we jumped in there. The sale, I believe, I haven't read the full figures, but I think I saw a headline that it set records. So one of many sales that have set records over the last 12 months. So the sales arena is quite strong and healthy, and there was a lot of action out there and saw a lot of faces and, you know, got to chat about horses. We've got four horses this year that have first 2-year-olds hitting the racetrack. And so, you know, some people from Ocala came up to look at some of the short yearlings here and start running them, and you know, they're starting to breed a couple there and starting to figure out what sales they're going to start going to here this spring. And so you know you start to pick the brain a little bit. And so heard some really good things about all four of ours. Carpe Diem, who's a $1.6 million 2-year-old himself, he was a grade one winning 2-year-old, grade one winning 3-year-old. He's remained at 25,000 throughout the first 4 years of his young career, and his yearlings were very, very nice at the sales. So hearing good things about them. He's probably also a horse that you're going to see more of his 2-year-olds probably being pointed, but the people who bought him at sales, the majority would be pointing them for the races. So he's a horse that we probably won't really hear a whole lot about until, you know, middle of the season, people pointing their nice stock to to the premier meets like Saratoga and Del Mar and Ellis Park. You know, their 2-year-old races have really expanded over the years. Then we also have Constitution, who hearing really good things out of Ocala. Him and Commissioner are two horses that really like had multiple people come up to me and tell me how much they like theirs, and they can't wait to take them to the sales and make sure you come see them. And so that's really exciting. You know, Constitution was a dual grade one winner by Tappet, out of a fantastic distorted humor mare. Ran a 111 by her when he won the Don, was undefeated when he won the Florida Derby. So he has every right to be an outstanding sire. And then Commissioner was a homebred for us that was just an awesome foal, awesome yearling. Had him as a 2-year-old, you know, had the talent to win at Saratoga as a 2-year-old. And then being by AP Indy out of one of our blue hen mares, he went on. He only lost by a darn nostril there in the Belmont Opponentless, but came back. He won the Pimlico Special, Hawthorne Gold Cup, some very prestigious races, and just an absolute ace specimen. And the other horse we have is by More Than Ready Daredevil. He was an excellent 2-year-old. He his Champagne Stakes was a 107 buyer. Faster Than Uncle Mo, Union Rags, some premier stallions. So we're very excited for him. He ran 97 when he broke his maiden first out of the box. More Than Ready himself is one of the best sires we have here in America. So all four stallions have every right to be very successful horses, and we're very excited for the year ahead of us with those four.
That's a great overview of what's going on the breeding side with Windstar. But I also want to ask you about Windstar Stablemates and Windstar Stablemates Racing, Sean. What's going on with that program?
Yeah, so it's we've had a program called the Windstar Stablemates, and it's really been around since very early on in Windstar. And Windstar itself came around in about 2001. And so everything really, Windstar is kind of, you know, going through waves of expansion and change and, you know, trying to be out at the forefront of everything. And so it's kind of started as a little fan group, and it's kind of expanded to where, you know, it's a membership group and you can choose your levels. And we have events at the farm. We have events at Saratoga. We have events at Churchill, Thurby. I know we do something on Thurby. So it's kind of something where you can kind of be part of Windstar. You know, not everybody can be involved at the top level of our game, and it's a lot of fun to be up there. I mean, that's you get to win races and everything. So what we've done is we've expanded that now into a racing syndicate partnership. And last year was our first year. I think we won 5 races. We won a stakes race with a filly called Well Humored, who was half to a grade one horse. We have her 2-year-old back in this group. But basically, it's a lease program. It's made up of 15 fillies and expanded from, we had 10 last year, we had 15 this year. It's a nice mix. You get older fillies that are in training and going. We have a 4-year-old called the Bounding Joy, who's with Rudolph Brissett. She's 2 for 3 lifetime. The only horse that beat her was Talkverve to me when she ran first time out at Fairgrounds. So that horse is grade one placed. So we're very excited for this filly. She's a beautiful filly by Quality Road. She's unbelievable. But we think she could be, you know, a graded stakes level type filly. We got another, 5 3-year-old fillies that are just turned 3 that are very close to running, or have just won Pioneer of the Nile. That's half to a grade one winner. She just won first time out for Steve Asmussen. Got a filly called Last Dance, who's the half sister to Spitester. She's probably about a month away. She's good reports on her from Bill Mott. You know, fillies with Rudolph Brissett, fillies with Todd Pletcher. So, you know, by joining the Winston, we're doing open enrollment now to the end of the month. And for $6,800, you get to buy a share. It's made up of 100 shares. It's a year lease. The fillies get leased off of us for the year. And we got this year, we got half sisters to Improbable, who's going to be running in Derby, hopefully, half sisters to Tourist. We've got half sisters to Good Samaritan. We've got first foals out of graded stakes winning mares. The whole appraisal of the bloodstock involved in this group of 15 fillies is $2 million. For $6,800, you get to be part owner of these horses for a year. You get if you're at the races, if you're at Saratoga, where a lot of these fillies hopefully you're going to be running later in the spring, if you're there and you're part of this group, you get seats that day, you get paddock passes. We do events up there once a year during the sales, have breakfast on the backside, go look at all the fillies. And then there's events obviously during Thurby and stuff. So it's not only do you get to be part of like the ownership group of these fillies, which have their own silks. They're a version of Windstar silks. They're black with this gold star. They're fantastic. But you get to be part owner of these fillies. And then you also get throughout the year some good events to come down to Lackington. If you've never been there, it's a great little city. Saratoga's obviously fantastic. Breeders' Cup, there's always some things going on. So it's part of, for a really small fee to be part of, the top level of the game and see exactly how it works. Some people might be thinking about doing this at a higher level. This is a great way to figure it out. You get to see all the bills, you get to find out what's going on, but you don't have the huge financial risk. So if it's something that you might be interested in, call us up and it's something, if you just try it out. I think we're going to have a really big year. I love the fact that we have older fillies and two-year-olds now. Last year we were very two-year-old heavy, so there were some kind of quiet periods, but now that the stable's gotten a little bit older and we've gone through the hiccups and doing a program for the first year, this year we're pretty excited about, and the bloodstock is as good as you can find anywhere.
Sean, you said 6,800. I've got 3,500. I need a horse, an even money shot that I can bet this 3,500 on. I'll have the 7,000 that I'll join stable mates. Who are we betting on this weekend? Give us a winner somewhere.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot, huh?
It doesn't have to be this weekend. Maybe something coming up you're excited about. You got to remember the last time on this show you gave out a nice priced winner to the listeners.
There's a half brother to Taprit out there that I heard good things on. And a French guy that trains at Payson Park has the horse. I can't remember exactly what the horse's name is, but it's a Spikestown 3-year-old colt out of Appealing Zophie.
Okay, that should be enough to figure it out. JK probably Googling as we speak and might have the answer in a minute. But if not, sometimes...
No, I have the French guy on my stable watch. When he runs one, I know about it.
There's another horse that we're I don't know how much of a price you're getting on, but a horse that I think could be prime for a big year there is a horse we have called New York Central. And he's going to opening weekend of Oaklawn, he's on target for, and he's a horse to keep an eye on this year. I think he has a chance to jump up and win a big one this year.
All right, lots of good ideas there. JK, perhaps you'll be in on the Windstar Stablemates Racing Partnership. Gentlemen, if you're ready, I think we should move along and talk about some stakes racing this weekend. How's that sound to you?
Let's do it.
Sounds good to me.
All right, let's move on to Gulfstream Park. We're going to start off with the ninth race, the Tropical Turf. We've got Heart to Heart in here, the one of my favorites, a horse we've been talking about, I think, since the very first year of this podcast, one of the first shows ever. I think Heart to Heart was among the first five winners ever given out on the old show. Looking at it quickly, looks like he's going to be awfully tough to down. Sean, as our guest, I'm going to let you go first. Is this a case of Heart to Heart or pass? Or is there something a little more interesting you're seeing when you look down at these PPs?
Well, I think it's a possible case of an older horse just happened to possibly lose a step, or maybe he just kind of went off form there for a bit. And Brian Lynch, who's extremely capable trainer, now has him going in the right direction. I mean, his work tab is fantastic. So looks like he's prime to see if the old war horse still has it. He's a 15-time winner. He loves the distance. He loves Gulfstream. So, I mean, if he's the heart-to-heart that we know that can run those triple-digit buyers and wire fields, which I think the Gulfstream course, from the little bit I've been watching it here in the last, week or so, I think it's pretty handy towards speed favoring. He's obviously he might be the lone speed. So if he gets a nice, easy lead and he's the heart-to-heart that we all know and love, I think he should go gate to wire, but for some reason, that ability has diminished a little bit. It leaves it open for some other horses. Maybe Jose Ortiz and Christophe Clement That horse is stretching out, going two turns. So that's one that I find a little interesting there.
Talking about White Flag as a possible alternative for Sean, though acknowledging the potential superiority of Heart to Heart, who loves the course and might just have that pace advantage too. JK, how do you see it?
Heart to Heart obviously has the pace advantage and runs well on the course and should be loose on the lead. The horse that I'm going to try to mess around with a little bit is on the rail, Vici, for Maker. You know, Maker did this last year with Hoagie, stretching Hoagie out and winning the graded stakes going two turns in the flat mile down there at Gulfstream. I love the fact that this horse is tactical, will obviously be able to get his position moving forward, should save ground all the way around there. If Heart to Heart misses a step, this horse is going to have a perfect trip and should be able to mow him down. If Heart to Heart is the real Heart to Heart, he'll win by four. Those are the only two horses that I need.
So I feel bad. We've gotten some great feedback from this listener survey. I'm going to keep it open for a couple more shows, by the way. And if you haven't filled it out yet, I implore you, please do us a favor. If you like this show and you want to help us out, this is one of the things you can do to help us the most. On average, people are completing it in 3 minutes, and that's with a lot of people writing long responses for the last question, which we appreciate, but you don't even need to do. I think you could fly through in 2 minutes and answer this survey and help us out, giving us the demographic info we need going forward. That survey is pinned to my Twitter. You can also find it at inthemoneypodcast.com. But the reason I bring this up is because I would say by far the number one piece of feedback we've gotten in that freeform question at the bottom is wagering strategy. People want more on wagering strategy on these Friday shows. And I apologize because I'm not going to ask JK or Sean about wagering strategy because I didn't prep them for it. Host fail, hashtag host fail. But going forward, that's the kind of thing I want to do more of in these Friday segments where we talk about, okay, so everybody thinks this 4-5 is live and then everybody has one alternative. Well, how do you try to turn that opinion into money? And I would imagine the answer will involve creatively betting exotics. But again, not going to put feet to the fire, JK, unless you have an idea right off the top of your head in terms of how you might bet this creatively.
No, I mean, I think exactly like you said, taking some time to spend more money on Heart to Heart than you are going to spend on a horse like Vici or in Sean's case, on the Christoph horse, White Flag. So it just depends exactly what you think about the other legs. But the basic idea is that you need to spend more money on the thing that you think is more likely to happen.
In your betting generally, not necessarily holding your feet to the fire about this race, Sean, how do you approach it when there's a big favorite you know is live, but you're not willing to just single and commit to? Is there a particular wagering strategy that you employ?
For the minimal bettor that I am and not doing it on a day in, day out, I would probably, in that situation, just pass and sit back and watch.
It's a great answer, really, and an underrated answer. It's one of the tools that we have in our toolbox, the ability to not bet every race. I'm glad you said that.
And one of the reasons for doing that is one of the worst I ever beat. And it wasn't a bad beat, but it was one of those where you thought a 4-5 could not get beat. Was when Regal Ransom, I think it was the Kelso, and he was like 4-5, and I put whatever I won that week on him, and his way wired the field, and I think Regal Ransom ran last, and I said never again will I bet a 4-5 shot with everything in my pocket.
You touched that stove; it was hot. You don't touch that stove again. So one of the things about this particular week, I remember this from last year as a host. We talked about hashtag host fail. Some of my famous mispronunciations. There's two pretty easy stakes to mispronounce this weekend. And this one, it's not that the Marshuas River is hard in and of itself to pronounce, but the way that it gets abbreviated in some places where it's just like the MRSH and that's all they give you, that there can be a momentary synaptic misfire where I come out with something crazy. And there's one when we get to California that I absolutely butchered last year. But let's talk about this race that goes as race number 11 at Gulfstream Park. JK, where are you in here? No big favorite to lean on.
No, I'm going to I'm gonna definitely want to take a look at the workout report on Lawson. I don't know, what is that? What are we doing here, Pete? Lawson Signore.
I would say La Spanish, Signore. I'd go with the Italian La Signore.
Okay, there you go.
French bread. So that, you're going Italian and French bread.
Well, I see the G in the end. You know, you lived up there in the Bronx.
I mean, it gives you a little bit of a hint of how you're supposed to La Signore.
There you go. I'm glad we have a linguistic expert on here. I can't get away from my Bronx background. Not that I ever lived up there, but the family history. I want to go Italian. All right, so it's La Signore. Is that where you're going, JK?
Well, I'm going to definitely take a look there. 189-day layoff. I want to look at the workout report. The last three works were on the turf at Palm Meadows, and so that, you know, it can get a little bit tricky. We talk about it when it happens on the dirt, when those turf horses are working on the dirt, it can be misleading. You're going to know exactly how this one's coming into the race by looking at the workout report there. The DRF clocker report would be a good place to start. I like the Todd horse down on the inside. Obviously, I'm going to pick another horse where I'm going to struggle to pronounce the name just so that I can set Pete up to say something very mean about me. But I like the fact that this horse is tactical. The same idea on the Maker horse in the stake earlier. She's going to save ground down inside. She'll get a great trip from down in there. She's tactical enough. As long as, you know, Javier should put her in the race. She shouldn't get shuffled back. Should be able to save ground when they turn for home. She should have every chance. So it's going to be the one of the seven for me, pending the workout report. The one obviously will probably present more value. Foreign horses always get bet on the turf here.
I'm not going to overthink it. I'm just going to go Bellevase on the one. Sean, what do you think of this race?
Hitting a little bit on what Jonathan was talking about was the workouts. You know, she's off a little bit of a layoff. I actually got XBTV is fantastic with these workouts. That's something that I'll go and use that. And I believe I saw in the news this week that ExpressBet was embedding workout videos in to their ADW platform. Not to give anybody a plug, but I think that's really fantastic.
Hey, we're not with DRF anymore. We can plug it. We're not with DRF anymore. We can plug anybody.
So she has up on XBTV, which I think they do a great job. And because Stronach owns Gulfstream, because they own Santa Anita, because they own Palm Meadows, we get this, you know, if you use it and you enjoy it, it's fantastic what they do, but they do a lot of these turf works at Palm Meadows. So they got two works up for her. She looks like she's traveling great, La Signore. Obviously, the filly on the rail there that you like, Pete, has, you know, one of the best pedigrees that you're going to find with Le Cloak there. But I think La Signore, and this is an angle, is just the class of the field. A lot of these other fillies are kind of, you know, jumping up into great stakes. This filly's lightly raced. Several of her races last year were extremely impressive and showed a lot of talent. I mean, the Belmont Oaks is one of the best three-year-old turf filly races you can run in. I mean, that is a premier race. And they've done a great job with that day with the Belmont Derby as well. But her Wonder Again was quite impressive. The day she won at Keeneland, she ran second at Keeneland, but that race was a stakes race. That's what's fun about Keeneland there in the spring is Toinette was Neil Drysdale's filly. She was awesome. This filly was actually the talk of the paddock, La Signore, and then Cool Beans herself came back, and I believe is great stakes placed throughout the year. So, you know, I just think her running lines, although she doesn't have as many starts as several of these others, she does have that proven graded stakes ability, which some of these other fillies, although they do have some age advantage on her and toughness, they just quite, you know, if they have jumped up into the greatest stakes level, they haven't been able to get it done. And this filly's a proven great stakes filly.
You mentioned Le Cloche, Sean. I don't remember exactly, but is that the family of Winter Memories and all those other? She was out of Memories of Silver, I think. But is it closely related to that whole group and the Phillips Empire?
Yeah, I mean it's obviously one of those families there that the Phillips family of Darby Dan has cultivated for many, many generations. And but she was a ghost after filly that was obviously quite talented. And it's turned into a good broodmare. But yeah, Winter Memories is down there on the second dam. Memories of Silver is the dam of Le Cloque.
Oh, okay. There you go. They are connected.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's one of those daughters of one of their foundation mares. So you know, that family on turf is one of the best turf families we see, you know, generation, generation out. And this filly's now five years of age. So these turf horses, when they get up there in age and that pedigree and that class and that family comes through, they're going to win one point. So she has every right to be right there. I just think La Señora is just the pure class of the field.
One of the things we love to do when Sean comes on is talk about breeding angles that are useful for horse players. When I came into the game just as a horse player, you start reading industry news, and there'd be so, to my mind at that time, so much breeding info, and I wouldn't always even fully be able to grasp it. And as I've gotten further in my development as a horse player, I realize not only is it interesting and not only is it part of the engine that drives the game, of course, along with the betting dollar, but there is a lot of signal and some interesting stuff you can pick up that's going to help you to cash bets. A point that Mike Maloney makes in Betting with an Edge that I agree with is there still seems to be equity in many situations, especially in turf races, but dirt races too, on certain female families that tend to be extra productive. And when you can find a horse from one of these families, sometimes people will just be betting them off straight numbers, and they might have a little something in hand that you can't see there in the pages of Daily Racing Form that can help you cash a bet. I would assume, as a breeding industry guy, Sean, you agree with that.
I do, and then also where you can find that useful is possibly in your two turn races.
Yes,
One
great
filly
point.
that comes to you know that those two races at Aqueduct, they're both mile and eighth races for 2-year-olds there.
Remsen and Demoiselle.
You know that there's very few 2-year-olds that want and can get a mile and eighth sometimes at that point in the year, and finding that horse that wants that truly wants the distance and Positive Spirit, the Pioneer of the Nile filly that won for Rudy Reset, she was you know she had all kinds of female families. She's a half to a Derby winner, and you look on paper, and she's the one. You know, Rudy was pretty high on her, but she's still sitting there, I think, 10 or 12 to 1. And but she's, you know, on paper, the pedigree says she would love a mile and eighth, and she ended up drawing off by 10, and everybody else was scrambling with their tongues hanging out to the wire. So, and there's times, you know, in that sense as well, that you can use it and help separate. I think it's very useful, especially with 2-year-olds. I think once you get an older horse and they've got more PPs to fall back on. You kind of know what they are, right? You kind
That's
of
right.
know, you know, whether it be a soft turf course or a firm course or loves a slop or, you know, had only been running some races, wasn't his ideal distance, but he's back to his ideal distance. The older horses, you have more info on, but I think the younger horses especially are very useful to know kind of the bloodlines a little bit.
Let's move on to California, and this is the race I was talking about before. I don't even remember what I said, but I believe it was as bad as when I called the Alcibiades, the Alcibiades, whatever I said last year for the Las Ciénegas. But I'm very confident in my pronunciation now. It goes as race six. It is a grade three, 6.5. We're going down the hill, but we're going down the hill, but because JK, have you noticed the forecast out there in California?
I haven't noticed. It's always sunny in California. What are you talking about?
It's meant to rain, and it's meant to rain to the point where John Sadler has entered Sell Court in the assumption or hope, I think, that this is going to be washed off and run as a sprint on the dirt. So I do not think you will be seeing Sell Court, if the rumors are true, if this race holds on the turf. I wish I could have another host fail. I could have prepped you guys for the fact that this was probably coming off. Let's talk about it as a turf race because that's what it was meant to be. But just know we won't go too deep into the weeds with that in mind, that the jury's very much out on which surface this race is going to be held on. We also have one in here, Compelled, who we talked about extensively during that super fun hour on the old show we had in December with Craig Burnick, one he's very excited about. I would imagine a scratch will be on hand if this one does change surfaces. JK, what do you have for us in this one?
Oh my gosh, I'm feeling bad. I did my out of the gate play for DRF this week was like a whole play around beating Sell Court. Like, I didn't know she. I thought she. They're trying to run her on the turf.
Oops.
Well, that's what they get. No, so you know, well, on the turf, I thought the two horses made the most sense. I thought Compelled. Obviously, we talk about the rail not being a great place to be going down the hill. I still think she kind of falls out of the race and then comes running with one run. So I don't think it's going to really be a problem for her. And then Painting Corners, I think, is extremely talented. When you could win going five turf sprinting at Del Mar and win going 6.5 down the hill at Santa Anita, I think it says a lot about your talent and the quality. So those are the two horses that I thought were the most likely winners. And I thought I was going to get cute trying to beat Selcourt, but obviously John Sadler is smarter than I am.
He's one step ahead of you, JK, at the least. Sean, anything to add to this, or should we just quickly move it along to the next one?
Well, actually, you brought up betting angles, and this is actually the down the hill turf course. As far as California racing goes, I know the majority of just through friends that are out there, and you kind of go out there for the Breeders' Cup or stakes races, and you learn some things. So just from watching these stakes races and learning about this turf course, I mean, here I think I generally what people have taught me about this turf course is, A, the outside posts are better for going down the hill. Milers on the main the main turf course, milers cut back to down the hill are very advantageous. And I used that once in the Breeders' Cup. I think there was a Munnings colt. I'm trying to remember. Dan Hendricks trained the horse. Ohm, and then the model might have had the horse at this point. It was the horse named Obviously. He was that free-running miler.
Yes.
And they ran, I think they might have both got nosed out, but they ran like second and third or first and second. They're both like 25-1 or something. But I used the miler off the main turf, and you know, they were both California horses, which I think is an advantage. So Breeders' Cup's going back out there. So those horses tend to run pretty good down the hill out there. So, but looking at it, you know, a horse like Belvoir Bay has a lot of experience on the turf course. She's won 4 times going down the hill. I didn't even consider looking to see if there's any rain coming into California. So I, as well, was kind of scratching my head as to why Selcourt was doing what she was doing. But I guess it goes to show you, JK, you're not the only one who underprepares. But the horse I was kind of like wanting to get excited about a little bit, she was sitting at 12-1 with the other Proctor, with the blinkers off. Philly, they'd been running 2 turns on the turf last time out. You know, was a mile on the turf. I don't know. First time going down the hill, Proctor, rooting for Tim and Lisa Turner here. Very good breeders here in Lexington. So I don't know. I was just going to take a swing there, but.
Makes sense. I think that both those points you make about the downhill are correct, with one little addition, and this is just anecdotal, and there are databasers out there. Some of you listen, and if there's a databaser listening who wants to help look at this particular question, I'd be appreciative. If not, one of the things I want to do once I get the show a little bit more stable and get my new professional life established is do a little bit of databasing of my own. But the thing I want to test is that idea of the rail down the hill not being where you want to be. I think it's correct, but I think it's much more correct when you're looking at a big full field as opposed to the short fields they often get. So I think when people have looked at that question in macro, it hasn't left footprints that is correct, but I think it's probably correct based on how many horses are in the race. Anyway, something fun to test.
I think the other thing, if you're databasing, I think the other part to keep in mind is like a running style of the horse that happens to draw the rail.
Great point.
I think that's probably and the race design itself. I want to say that a horse with speed on the rail in a moderate to fast-paced race is at a big disadvantage going down the hill, more so than like the opposite of what that would be. You know what I mean? I think that probably impacts it quite a bit.
I think that's a good point. And field size, again, makes sense that would sort of be related to that, JK, expecting a mid to fast pace more, the more horses who sign on. Anyway, something we'll be talking about more on the show as we go on. It's an interesting, fun aspect of USA horse playing to try to suss out what's going on with that down the hill turf race. And Sean points out we'll have a Breeders' Cup race down the hill too, which will be very interesting because you're going to get horses coming with great looking form from Europe. They're going to be at a serious disadvantage no matter what the form book says to me, because it is so quirky compared to some of those California horses who've been running down there all along. Let's move on to race 8. It's the La Cunada. Not going to catch me out there, but yet another one where the host fail is just right on the tip of the tongue. We're going a mile and a 16th on the dirt here. We're going to push this one back in your court, Sean.
Well, looking at this, and I guess quickly also paying attention that you probably need to pay, it could be a wet track. There's a little bit of wet form there. The 5-2 shot in there for Don Schnell, who, interesting enough, is 5-2, but she won once already on the wet, and so did Cake's Wildcat. I'm going to be slightly rooting for Bernina Starr because we are actually standing her half-brother national flag in Ohio this year. So I wouldn't mind padding the stats of his pedigree a little bit if she can get it done. And then kind of a pedigree play here, a filly that looks like it's kind of going in the right direction. And she's trying, looks like dirt for the first time, but she is actually a half-sibling to the good horse Papa Clem. The elusive quality filly, Stradella Road, Bayerano's up. She's 5-1. She'd probably enjoy the wet going, being out of a blonde demi mare and being by elusive quality. And so I'm going to, if I had to be pressed to bet one, I think I might put a little bit of across the board on the two horse.
JK, did this connect to the pick play you gave out for Out of the Gate, where you're still a participant over there for our friends at DRF, or did you have to look at this one individually for our show?
I didn't. I didn't have a strong opinion in this race, so I didn't try to connect the. I didn't try to connect the two. You know, I looked at Stradella Road too, and I guess the part that threw me off the most is like there was no dirt tries. As a 2-year-old or as a 3-year-old, and that with a horse that you think that would excel on the dirt, with as big as our 3-year-old dirt programs can be in this country, you would think that at some point, if this horse had shown the ability to run on the dirt, they would have tried the horse on the dirt. And I could be completely wrong. It's just that part of the narrative is throwing me off and looking to that horse, because Timeform US suggests that something, you know, on or near the lead is going to be in an advantageous spot. This one projects to kind of get the rail and be in that position. I went with the Richie Baltus horse, the Lemon Drop Kid, filly, Lemuna, who ran well in the grade one last year, ran fourth to Val Dori in the grade one Zenyatta, had the 91 days off, comes back closing into blue fractions on the turf, and then runs back in 13 days. Kind of quick turnaround, forwardly placed, should be sharp, should be much better second off. I think should be better getting back onto the dirt. So I went with the 3, Lemuna, as my top choice. But I think the race is really tough.
All right. There you have it, our analysis of the graded stakes racing this weekend. I'm going to circle back to each of you guys if you have a final thought you'd like to share. Could be anything about highlighting something we've already talked about, looking ahead to something else, an observation, whatever it is. But before I get to the final thoughts, I just want to mention one more time about the survey. Help me out. I hope I don't sound like a broken record, but it really would be fantastic if you could go to inthemoneypodcast.com, fill out our listener survey. Hopefully you'll already be subscribing to the blog and or to our feed on iTunes. Both of those things also big helps as we get this show. We're already off and running. We're already up at the same numbers we were at the other show. And now for the first time in its history, we're actually going to be marketing the DRF play. Oh, I said it and I'm going to leave it in just to punish myself. For the first time ever, we're going to be marketing the podcast, really looking for those numbers to grow. And so if you guys can help us do that, I always thank the listeners at the end of the show, and I mean it sincerely. You're what makes it so fun to do. You're what makes it possible. I am, in this one instance, I try not to ask too much. In this one instance, I am going to ask for help in these areas. So please share the show with your friends in racing and take those other little steps, and we should be in good shape. Okay, Sean, I'm going to start with you. Do you have a final thought concerning racing this weekend or anything else in the racing world?
Pete, I just want to thank you for having me on again. It's always a good time getting on here and talking to both you and John Kitchen, and very excited for the new show. Your show is fantastic. I know a lot of people in our industry really enjoy listening to it. It's great insight. It's got good speed to it. And so hopefully you can take this new show and grow with it. And very exciting. But just to help you get the DRF out, when you're on that yoga mat, get one with yourself, get rid of the DRF and get the ITM in and the money, ITM in, DRF out. You can do it. I know you can. And excited for where the new show is going to go. And can't wait to see you out at the races.
Thank you, my friend. That's a good idea. A little, you know, you're on the yoga mat and they ask you to set your intention for the practice. It's supposed to be, you know, I'm sending my inner love and peace and compassion out to a friend in need or something like that. In my case, it's just going to be intention to don't mess up the letters. Don't say it. Don't say DRF. Don't say DRF. JK, a final thought.
Yeah, my final thought is why Sean thanked you for being on the show. He didn't thank me. So I'm not really sure what's going on.
I said thank you to everyone. Don't you worry about that.
All right, gentlemen, we've done an hour on here, and that's what we're going to do for today. We will be back shortly. Sean, no good deed goes unpunished. You'll be back soon. I want to thank JK. I want to thank Sean. I want to thank DJ Unstable for his continued tech support, really berating me for the bad levels, apparently, I've been putting out in the final product. Listeners have not complained. They used to complain all the time with the bad sound. Oh, one other note. Somebody asked about the banging and clanging they're hearing in the background the last couple of shows. This is a case of the law of unintended consequences. Having good sound now and recording from a place that was built in the 19th century, it's cold in New York, and we got an old furnace, and that's just the banging and clanging of the pipes, not JK's ghost that he's afraid of, as one listener speculated to me. So don't worry. The ghost is shackled up in the boiler room, not actually making those noises. Anyway, thanks to you guys. Thanks to DJ Unstable. Most of all, thanks to all of you for listening. A lot of listeners really stepping up and helping out, getting the new show going, and I just appreciate it so much. We will be back on Monday or Tuesday. Not sure what we're going to do yet, but we'll be back early next week. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.